At the beginning of October, Jennifer started a new sermon series entitled Being Christian in a Post-Christian World. Within this larger theme, Jennifer has and will be reflecting weekly on each of Knox's four core values. Last Sunday, she reflected on compassion and inclusion, being in loving relationship with others and kin to all God's creatures. She talked of being clothed in love as the right attitude to accepting others. Staying within the theme of being Christian in the 21st century, but leaving Knox's core values to Jennifer, I chose the theme of social justice. As with compassion, social justice is integral to the message of the Gospels and of Jesus. And I'd like to start in what on the surface may seem like a very un-Canadian place, church and politics. But I believe that what I am doing, or what I'm going to share, is beneficial for all of us seeking social justice as Christians in the 21st century. This past winter, Dennis and I, while vacationing for 3 months in Arizona, worshiped at a United Methodist Church. Throughout the winter, in response to a government that most of the people were struggling with, that promoted racism, hatred, me first, and prejudice, we heard a deep groaning of the people to restore right relationship, to welcome the stranger, to protect the weak, steadily rising up through the hymns, the sermons, and the prayers. Similarly, on a U.S. website called Spirituality and Practice, the same lament gave voice to compassion and inclusion by bringing together writers and theologians to reflect upon the essence and complexity of democracy in a sort of spiritual think tank called the Practicing Democracy Project. Jim Wallace, founder and CEO of Sojourners Magazine, was one of the theologians and scholars in attendance at this think tank. In his book, Who Speaks for God?, Wallace asks, can we expand our vision of community beyond our own skin, family, race, tribe, culture, country, and species? Spiritual life is more than what we believe. It also includes how we relate. Who is included in the we and who is not? That is both a spiritual and a political question. How we answer it will likely determine our future. In his book, Soul of Politics, Wallace puts forth an ethically rooted and socially responsible political vision. We must learn to judge our social and economic choices by whether they empower the powerless, protect the earth, and foster true democracy. Agreeing with Gandhi's view that poverty is the worst form of violence, Wallace finds signs of spiritual transformation and social renewal among inner city residents of his hometown, Washington, D.C., in the black townships of South Africa, and in the rural barrios of Central America and the Philippines. He writes, between impossibility and possibility, there is a door, the door of hope. Those seeking environmental justice, racial reconciliation, gender equality, and economic innovation have walked through this door. I have a video that, there is a video that I'd like to share with you. It's an interview with Jim Wallis on why social justice is integral to the Christian life.
Jim Wallis, thanks for joining us. You are a best-selling author, a theologian, a public speaker, a social activist, recently White House advisor under President Obama. You're the president and founder of Sojourners, a U.S. publication that has been inspiring people for a very long time to put their faith into action. What is it about Christianity and the person of Jesus and the Gospels and the Bible that demands that social justice be an integral part of it?
Also a Little League baseball coach for my two sons. I did that for 11 years and 22 seasons. And in that context, I'll give you an example, all of my black players had a parent who would tell them how they should behave and not behave in the presence of a policeman with a gun. Where to keep your hands, where not to reach, to keep yourself safe. None of my white kids had their parents have the talk with them. And most of the white parents weren't even aware the talk was going on. This is life. This is the real world. This is people's lives, the streets. I've often said the incarnation is just God hitting the streets in Jesus Christ. You know? For those who want to take justice out of Christian faith, as an evangelical, I'll say they're not being biblical. It's just everywhere in the Bible. 2,000 verses on poor people, justice, justice, justice. Amos says, take away from me the noise, the noise of your worship, but let justice roll down like waters. Jesus' first sermon, Nazareth. I've been anointed to bring good news, evangel to the poor. It's just, it's integral, as Francis would say, integral. We are people who want to live by the kingdom of God, a new order that Jesus announced and brought in, which changes everything, personally, spiritually, socially, racially, economically, and politically. It turns the world upside down.
There's a very famous saying in the Catholic Church, at least, that the social teachings of the Catholic Church, which is this body of doctrine that's been developed over particularly the last century, but there's some fantastic insights in it, but it's often referred to as the Church's best-kept secret. Why do you think that is? Why is it such a secret? Why does it seem so shocking and jarring and novel when you're describing it to me? It seems so alive and new.
As an evangelical, I got converted by Catholic social teaching because I read that. Whoa, someone's thought about this, right? It's the best body of teaching in all the churches on what the gospel means in the world. The ancient idea of the common good, what it means to govern. I think the black churches in the U.S. have been the most holistic, the most faithful to living that out. And so I looked at the black churches and I looked at the Catholic social teaching. And for me, it just makes perfect sense if you want to look at the world from a gospel point of view. Best kept secret, perhaps because for an affluent church, for a church that's often more white than Christian, more American than Christian, more affluent than Christian, it's threatening. It's clear in the Bible this is about changing the world, and particularly what the Catholic social teaching calls the preferential option for the poor, which Jesus says, as you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. Francis is saying that all the time. That's my conversion text. That was what brought me to Christ, Matthew 25. That's so clear. And yet, when we're conformed to the world, and we are more affluent than Christian, more white than Christian, more American than Christian, more of whatever cultural context has conformed us, then Catholic social teaching or reading the Bible is going to be threatening. The thing is, though, it's liberating.
I think the question that Wallace asked, we can ask ourselves in Canada. Are we more white, more affluent, more Canadian than the gospel? Responding to the gospel's call for helping others and working for social justice can be liberating and rewarding. But it can also be messy and complicated. For instance, this past spring and summer, we, the congregation, were helping a woman in the back, and I think her name was Jan, who pitched her tent behind Knox. Tina, pitched her tent behind Knox for almost 3 months. We wanted to do the right thing. It was quite messy at times. I think of Corfield Housing, 222 Corfield. It's been a messy debate in our local politics. And why? Because we're not sure what that's going to look like, what it's going to mean, what it's going to promote. We know on paper, but what does it really mean? And it's messy, and people are nervous. I think of SOGI 123, the school curriculum, for teaching children and young adults about inclusion, about gender identification, and having questions to answer those questions. And the protests that is happening all over BC in some areas about the SOGI curriculum. I think just recently about what's happening in Saudi Arabia with the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Canada's sale of tanks, they're lined up, ready to go to Saudi Arabia. And there's a lingering. Are those tanks going to go? Does it make any difference what they do over there to people? So there's a question mark. Regardless of complications and messiness, the United Church, along with other faith traditions, espouses that working for peace and justice is not optional. It's integral to the Bible and to the person of Jesus. Our United Church social statement says, caring for one another was central to Jesus' teaching. Feeding the hungry, satisfying the thirsty, sheltering the homeless, clothing the naked, caring for the sick, visiting those in prison. Moreover, Jesus announced that God's kingdom of peace and justice is at hand and challenged structures of discrimination and oppression. The United Church partners with other faiths and groups, with other faiths and groups to challenge the structures of discrimination and oppression. On the Canadian website, Policy Options, Public Forum for Public Good, Joe Gunn, the Executive Director of Citizens for Public Justice, one of our partner groups, by the way, reflected on the role of Canadian churches as allies for social justice. And he wrote, "People of faith and the institutional bodies of many churches have played and continue to play a crucial role in the development of progressive social policy in this country. There is a long history of positive church action to defend human rights, broaden Canada's refugee policies, expand and defend Medicare, and offer alternatives to the economic dominance of free markets over the lives of the poor. Gunn points out that, nevertheless, Canadians are likely more familiar with the traditional church role of direct service to the poor. Some assume that churches never address the causes of poverty or injustice. And yet, the United Church is very good at adjusting those issues. This was handed out this morning in your bulletins. And you can still send this in, and it's postage free. Chew on This is a good example of working ecumenically and partnering with other groups to address the root causes of poverty. Last Tuesday, on International Day for the Eradication of Poverty, our moderator, Richard Bott, was part of an ecumenical delegation organized by our partner organization, Citizens for Public Justice, who went to Parliament Hill with apples and a message for the Prime Minister. We need a stronger, fully funded strategy to end poverty in Canada. Locally, we are invited to be part of this strategy by signing and mailing the postcard, Chew on This, which was handed out with your bulletin. Working together with other people of faith, we can make a difference in both direct reaching out and in changing the system to provide dignity for all. That's the key, together. It's hard to do something by yourself, or even a little tiny group, but together with support and working with other groups of like-mindedness, we can do so much more. Our United Church statement says, "We believe that we strengthen one another to work through God's grace for a better world. To this end, we cooperate with other churches, faith traditions, and people of goodwill to eliminate poverty and injustice, identify its root causes, and protect those who are most vulnerable. Throughout Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean, as well as in our own country, the United Church works with churches and organizations we call partners by supporting work they see as vital to their well-being. This enables us to go far beyond our normal reach in responding to injustice. And we have a group in the church that also works with other churches to do this as well. Matthew 25 forms part of Jesus' farewell speech to his disciples prior to the Last Supper, his betrayal and trial. There are two parables and then Matthew's summary of the Last Judgment, which we participated in acting out this morning. We helped the woman who pitched her tent behind Knox for 3 months. We've heard about the Corfield housing. And I think I'm reading the wrong page. Hang on a sec here. Aha. In the parables of Jesus teaches us how to have an attitude and spirituality that is receptive and open to recognizing and participating in his leadership of compassion and justice. So there's two parables and then the Last Judgment. The first parable is the one of the 10 handmaids, bridesmaids. And I think you're familiar with that, so I'm not going to repeat it. But what we learn from that parable is to be alert. And all of this helps us with reaching out to our neighbors in Parksville or globally through the United Church. To be alert, active waiting, open hearts, minds, and spirit. Use our eyes, ears, and minds to the world and the events around us. We will encounter Jesus in the least of these, in the hungry and the thirsty, in the stranger and the naked, and the sick and those in prison. Our faith is not only of the mind and of the heart, but it's also of the hands and the feet. We live our faith in what we do. We live it in what we do in places that aren't always pretty. And we don't know when or where the opportunity will present themselves. It could be the homeless on the street corner asking for change. Often, for me, I encounter the person sitting on the street outside of Naked Naturals when I go in for a coffee. And often I will bring them out a coffee because I don't know what their day is like. It's the refugee families fleeing from war and persecution. It's the working poor who can't afford rent. It's the medical system or our school systems collapsing under economic cutbacks, to name a few. We are simply asked to turn up. Learn what is going on. Go out to local events if you can. Be informed. Support church initiatives. We can be alert. We can be ready. In the parable of the talents, and if you'll remember, that's where the landlord leaves for a while and gives talents to his stewards and says, invest these wisely, and when I come back, I'll see what you did. Use the gifts we have to grow God's world of love and compassion. And each of our talents may differ, but each of us has something to invest. Is it time? Is it talent? Is it money? Just invest whatever it is you can into God's kingdom of compassion and love. Whatever it is you offer will make the world a better place. And then we come to Matthew's last judgment, which sums up all the parables, the sheep and the goats. And we acted that out this morning. Goats, how did it feel to be a goat? Sheep, how did it feel to be a sheep? It felt kind of good though, didn't it? Yeah. I think, you know, it's not a black and white thing. We have a little bit of goat and sheep in all of us. Sometimes it depends upon where we are in life, how we feel, what we're paying attention to. But the message is, we need to be aware and reach out. We need to know that God is always paying attention. And so, as best as we can, to participate in God's world. Matthew 40 is a call to conversion. Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. That is a call to conversion, and it's a hard one. It's not easy, folks. Sometimes it's messy. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes we just like to keep on walking and ignore. Sometimes we look at what's going on in our community and we say, oh, no, uncomfortable. Don't know exactly what's going to happen. It's messy. But we need to reach out. We need to think it through. We need to be open. As Christians, we are people of hope. And I leave you with these words by Jim Wallace, which I read earlier. Between impossibility and possibility, there is a door, the door of hope. Those seeking environmental justice, racial reconciliation, gender equality, and economic innovation have walked through this door of hope. All of us, wherever we are in life, are invited to God's world of hope. Amen.